Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
That robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're staring at your retirement account, shedding a tear like me. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90-plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those patrons, whoo, thank you, patrons, for being there for us, to allowing this show to continue with your generous support. Oh, now more than ever, we are so grateful. You can become a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod and get some of those cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bunch of bonus content to get you through the rest of your week. Oh, so much great stuff. You got Feeling This with Christian Spicer and Alex Sulman talking about the feelings behind video games. You've got spoiler chats, developer interviews. You have got the Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins us talking about all the wacky stuff. We just did a real fun, it was Wednesday, was the reveal of Switch 2. We talked about it in real time last week. Hot, hot takes. But usually that show is just wacky fun. It's all great. And you can be part of it too by becoming a patron at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who didn't want to ever retire anyway, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
You can't retire if you're never tired in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
Got to have that. Vampire energy. Just keep going. I got good news and bad news for you, Jeff, and for our listeners. I discovered a twist tie on my desk, and I apparently cannot put it down. So, you know, we're bringing that energy into all of the other things that are happening. I was really excited to talk Switch 2, and then, you know, there was a Switch 2 switcheroo, and it's a week. It's a week.
It's a week. It's a week. It's a twist. Twist tie is all we got holding this thing together.
That's all I got. This is my new console right here.
That's all holding this whole situation together. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm gonna pull back the curtain a little bit. We're gonna show you a little bit about how the sausage is made here at DLC. We are recording our 594th episode of DLC, and I believe Christian and I were trying to rack our brains. I believe this is only the second time in 594 weeks of doing this show that we have had a guest who no-showed on us. We did not. We had everything set up. This person was a really great person who seemed to be down and ready to go. Never been on the show before. And everything seemed great. We're sitting waiting. Nothing. No communication. So what did we do? We flipped through the old DLC Rolodex and we went to our reliable, the best.
There's very little flipping. There was very little. There's not a lot. It was like, I'm going to text him. Like that's what it came down to.
There's who could we possibly ask at the last minute of last minutes and would come through for us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a treat. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Canada and your downloadable Christian. But this week, once again, DLC stands for Die, Live, Continue, because from the Spawn on Me Empire, our friend, our savior this week, Khalif Adams, is back with us. Ka, thank you for being here, buddy.
Gents, it is always fantastic to see you all and be rocking with you. I guess DLC means doing late changes as well. Yes. this week.
Yes.
I'm the guest captain now. I get to make and tip my hat to all the folks who are out there in DLC land. And again, it's always great to be rocking with y'all, and I love the community, and they give me love too when I speak to them on the interwebs.
I'm glad to hear that. You deserve it. I think this turns out to be very serendipitous for us, because what a week to have you on. What a week to talk about stuff. Switch 2 week. You've been playing South of Midnight. We're going to talk about that. It's going to be a great episode. So let's jump in and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by heading over to our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out over there talking about games. And usually this would be the point at which I would say, what is your story of the week? But there's only one story. It's a multifaceted story, that's for sure. But as I said, it's Switch 2 week. That's the story. That's the story. That and, a certain in an economic collapse. But we'll get into that. We'll get into all of that. We got to talk Switch 2. And I really think this is all we're going to talk about in the Story of the Week segment, because there's so much to get into around it. Switch 2, coming June 5th. Question mark on the price, at least in America. Question mark on whether we'll be able to pre-order it, at least in America. But we saw a 1 hour long Nintendo Direct Wednesday. And I guess I'll just throw it out to you, Khalif. What is your general impression? Attack this from any angle you'd like. Switch 2, it's coming, we think. It's coming to most of the world. Who knows at this point about America? But, setting that aside for the moment, what do you think? What do you think of Switch 2?
Land of the free, home of the tariffs. I'm very excited for it. I mean, as a person who has been watching my Switch kind of grow cobwebs in the corner right now, waiting for the newest version to come out, I've been very excited to hear some impressions from a lot of our media friends who went to New York to go check out and get hands on with the device. And from everything that, all of the pricing aside, I think the bigger conversation for me was, is it doing something different? Is it bringing new features? Is it upping the kind of hardware levels of what this console is going to wind up being? And for me, I think it hit a lot of the notes that I was hoping it was going to. Bigger screen, prettier screen. Joy-Cons feel a little bit more sturdy and don't feel like you're going to rip off a piece of the hardware when you kind of detach and put them on. And for me, the biggest thing was, when I dock this thing, am I going to get 4K visuals out of it? And that was, from all the information that we got so far, it sounds like, they checked off all the boxes for me in terms of wanting to be able to go get that thing. Now, do I have to set up an OnlyFans account to buy one? I don't know. But I think for right now, at least from a hardware perspective, and at least from the way that they are talking about this device, it feels like they're finally catching up to the rest of the gaming world in terms of online connectivity and just a hardware spec perspective. So excited for what that's going to wind up being, and hype for, when we get a chance to finally get some hands on with it.
Yeah, I mean, just focusing squarely on the hardware side of it, right? This is going to be a 7.9-inch screen, double the pixels of the original Switch. So a 1080p LCD screen, not an OLED. Part of me thinks that's like to make way for the OLED update in a year or two. That's a cynical take, but, it's hard not to think, hey, they did that with the original Switch. Why are we stepping backward with LCD and not OLED? But it is an LCD screen, 1080p. As you said, 4K in docked mode, but only 1080p for the handheld mode, but up to 120 frames per second. And it supports HDR, which is great. Two USB-C ports, one on the top, one on the bottom. The top one, they're not just for convenience, not just because you don't want that cord sticking you in the belly button when you're holding it, but because we can also plug in a camera. The PlayStation Eye, I mean Nintendo Switch 2 camera, is going to be sold separately, but will be part of a big push for Nintendo to, as you said, be more multiplayer, more communal. A big portion of what they showed featured this C button that's going to be on the right Joy-Con that stands for chat. And when you press it, you will launch into chat. You can use your new PlayStation Switch 2 camera to capture your image and send it to your friends. You can put yourself into games like Mario Party with that camera. But also there's going to be voice chat, just dedicated voice chat as well if you don't have the camera. So what do you make of that bit of it, Khalif? You like the fact that we've got a whole button that's going to be dedicated to getting you into more multiplayer type situations?
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that they're doing it. You know, everyone was kind of, you know, racking their brains of, what does the C button do? We have no idea what the C button's going to do. And I think, again, I think that's another sign that they are thinking about not only the connectivity parts of it, but the community parts, if they wanted to kind of move the space a little bit further for them. I mean, the beauty of where Nintendo has kind of landed in terms of a company and strategy has always been, you know, this is a semi kids and more adult device because adults are buying this. But it's nice to be able to see them give you some guardrails to be able to make sure that this is going to be a thing that you don't have to worry as much about kids being able to jump on. They had a really great moment kind of towards the end of, I think, of the direct, where they had a conversation around like the new app that they have and how that will give you some space to be able to use some parental control so that kids can't just hit the button and go live with it.
Yeah.
But the first thing that popped into my mind was like, yeah, baby, we're back to Xbox 360 Uno times, baby. Yeah. It's going to get freaky out in Mario World. It's going to be real crazy out there. So, you know, we'll see. I think there'll be conversations around security of that. There'll be conversations about, you know, surveillance on all those things. You know, there'll be many, many tinfoil hat conversations to be had. But I think overall, I think it's kind of cool. I liked what they showed in terms of demo. You know, your face will pop up and you'll be able to talk to your friends and that stuff. But it also, now that you said it, it made me really mad because my PlayStation camera has gotten absolutely no use since its inception, since my buying it. That thing has gotten the most dust. It has never had anything work for it.
Well, the thing that makes me so angry, I mean, this is a complete tangent, but is, you know, my kids just have gotten super into Just Dance. And they stopped supporting the PlayStation Eye camera on Just Dance. It was like the one thing that it was perfect for. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm happy for what they're kind of trying to do. It'll be fun to see if they expand on it. The one thing about Nintendo is that that's not true. I was going to say that they really do love their accessories and actually support it. But Labo, what up with that? You know, like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So they're kind of in that same space where they are future thinking and future facing in a lot of different ways, but will actually get support. That's going to be the big thing for later.
Yes. You know, it's we got a camera and a mouse. So, you know, the Switch 2 has arrived in 1997. Sticking purely on hardware before we even get to the software side. Lots of speculation about Switch 2, what it was going to be capable of. They really didn't get into the weeds about quote-unquote power, right? We don't know. NVIDIA kind of came out with some stuff and said, hey, it's going to support DLSS. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be stuff that's going to happen behind the scenes, but we haven't heard any of the kind of specs we usually get from a Sony or a Microsoft hardware announcement because Nintendo doesn't care about that stuff. But the stuff we have been talking about was really front and center. This C button, this camera. Now, it does seem to me, I'll just tee this up to you. I want to hear your thoughts about the hardware in general, but I will tee it up in the sense that we've been talking about this stuff. And it does seem to me that for a device whose biggest selling point, I would say, is its portability. Kind of odd to me that you would put a camera in it that isn't on the device itself and have a mouse that kind of requires a surface to be on. You know, if you're going to have a mouse and a camera that you use on this device, that doesn't really seem to handshake well with the portability aspect. We heard a number of developers over the week talk about how, yes, you can use the mouse on your pant leg. You can do it on your lap. It works. So I guess that's cool. But like, seems like they could have put a camera in the top of this thing. A lot of devices have tiny little cameras in the top of it. They chose not to. I wonder what your take is on all of that.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question specifically, I think it's very Nintendo. They make a lot of unique hardware pieces that aren't supported that widely by others. And at some point, aren't really supported that widely by them. I don't think they give up on them. I would agree with Khalif there. I don't think they abandon them necessarily, but I think they have one or two exciting ideas for something and they go to market with those. And then the champions of those features have used their idea. And then no one else is kind of a champion of that feature. So it doesn't get used or it isn't front and center the same way in the device. And so I think one way to look at it, I think for the camera and the mouse and stuff like that, is that it further makes this thing kind of a different definition of it, but a Switch, right? It can be this thing, you're at a desk and you're using a mouse and you've got a webcam and it can be that type of experience, or it can be this thing that switches into this handheld device that you're taking on the go with you, and you maybe give up some of those features, or some of those features are, you know, maybe a little more cumbersome to you, so you wouldn't want to engage with it that way necessarily, even though you could. They did show in their trailer the device on its kickstand, which seems like a usable kickstand now, with the camera plugged in. So you could pack all that stuff and take it with you, but yes, it's not the way that you would necessarily use it as a mobile device, but kind of how it can become all of these different things. And I think the question, Jeff, for me, that is not going to be answered until this thing is in the market for a couple of years, is how well are those supported, or how essential are they? You know, how essential to the console experience are those things, or are they just nice accoutrements? You know, they talked about HD Rumble on the first Switch and how you can feel one ice cube or three ice cubes and how it's going to be this revolution in touch. And they had, I think, one game and one, two Switch that kind of used that. And then it just became Rumble, you know, from that point forward. The DS, as much as you like to talk about how it was so unique and that you could hold it all these different ways because of how the screens worked, it largely became a here's screen A, here's screen B style approach. And that Nintendo then kind of even did away with in the 3DS. And so I think we're going to see stuff like that with these two features in general. But in the device itself, I'm super high on it. I put out a newsletter, my Let's Chat Games Day of React, because I was driving on that Wednesday and wasn't able to join you in Atlanta. I'm super high on it. I think it does a lot of things right. As a device, I think it does a lot of things right. I'm pretty excited.
So tell me the things that you would deem it doing right.
Cobb mentioned a lot of them. Bigger screen, better controllers, better Joy-Con sideways if you want to use it in that way. And I think they're using NVIDIA tech in interesting ways, mentioning the DLSS. And I haven't seen this confirmed, but the vocal isolation of the mic, they did talk about having that away and having some of that. It seemed like NVIDIA broadcast style tech in it. Also using the little webcam and allowing you to have a rough green screen out, which I think is important for a lot of people in terms of ease of use. So you don't have your background behind you necessarily while you're playing with friends or playing with people online. And I think the specs of the device, having it be able to go to 120 frames per second, is going to give a lot of games, I think, that 40 frames per second sweet spot where, because you have that, you know, you're dividing it by numbers that fit whole numbers, you can get that 40 frames per second that isn't quite 60, but isn't as rough necessarily as 30. And the extra power under the hood for a device that I think its biggest selling point is always Nintendo's games. I think we're going to see a lot of really great Nintendo games on this system. And because of things like DLSS and things that kind of help it along the way, I think we'll see more ports going forward. So for a lot of folks, this can be the, you know, one console and they don't feel as left out. The biggest question I have about this, Jeff, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this, is the Switch 1 has had like an 8-year lifespan now, right?
Yeah.
This is the Switch 2 is now coming out, much as the GameCube did, in an era where kids who grew up with the Switch 1 are now teens. And are they going to view the Switch 2 as kiddie? Not because it's a purple lunchbox, but just because that's what I had when I was 8.
I mean,
and now I'm 16.
I don't want to get into software quite yet, but I think the antidote to that sentiment is, hey, we got a exclusive From Software game.
And they showed Cyberpunk, and
we got Borderlands 4. You know, we got the M-rated stuff, and it was front and center. You know, there's not going to be I think that's not really too much of a danger, at least initially, because it does seem like third-party support is really strong so far, and a lot of these sort of high-profile M-rated and sort of, you know, adult-geared experiences are going to be there. But I do find myself, I think among the three of us, the least excited about this thing. And I read somebody, I think it was friend of the show, Mike Minotti, had a Blue Sky skeet this week that I re-skeeted. I don't even like using that term. But
you can just say post, you know. Like post is right there.
Post is better. But I want to show how hip and cool I am with the lingo. You know?
Got it. Slay, bro.
So I was like skeeting around, you know. And his post was, you know, pretty bad week for the keep the politics out of video games crowd, which I think is, you know, is spot on, right? Is, you know, for all the folks that come into our iTunes reviews and are like, DLC, get that politics. I'm so annoyed when they bring up politics in the video. Well, guess what? There's politics in video games. There's politics in everything. It affects our lives, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? What happens affects our lives in the world. And so it's going to be difficult to sort of talk about this. Like, it's so crazy that it happened on a Wednesday, and literally the next day, everything, the context in which we're going to be even able to talk about this is so different. Because I don't know, like, I think already a $450 or $500 system, depending on which SKU, you know, they announced, which who knows if that's the actual price. And maybe by the time you hear this, there is going to be some clarity on that, because by Monday morning, Tuesday morning, who knows what's going to happen in the world. We're in a crazy, crazy time, ladies and gentlemen. But I think for a system that is priced at the price of a PlayStation 5, right? You can get the PlayStation 5 for $500, right? I think this is a pretty disappointing offering. And I'm surprised to be saying that. I think if you had shown me this system at $300, I'd be like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Switch 2. Obvious. $450? 50% more than the launch price of the original Switch? When we're stepping backward. We're getting an LCD screen that does 1080p. We're getting.
We're not stepping backwards from the launch Switch.
Not stepping back from the launch, but the Switch that you could buy now for less than this Switch. This the sort of standard that I think Nintendo would like us to expect. You know, the fact that we're looking at. What are they right now? Like 120 original Switch games that don't work on it right now. Like there's a compatibility list that Nintendo itself put out that shows 120 original Switch games that just won't boot on Switch 2. Not obscured games like Doom Eternal is one. Fortnite. They're putting out a Switch 2 version of Fortnite because the Switch version of Fortnite just don't work. That's crazy. That there's they're going to be selling physical editions of games that are just codes to download. I mean, that's bonkers to me. Like, I feel like Nintendo is, you know, doing some really strange things here. This C button, you know, hey, maybe this will end up being cool. I don't think what they showed of it was cool. I think, you know, everybody is talking about the frame rate that they were showing. And as I said on the Wednesday show, kudos to Nintendo for not hiding that or faking it and not trying to show that it was going to be super smooth when it ended up not being so. They actually showed the sort of, you know, low frame rate that you're going to get when you stream somebody else's screen to your system. But that's just, it's like a slideshow. It looks very bad and low res. So is that something that people are going to be doing, that to dedicate a button to that? Do I want this device? Me personally, I'm just talking about me personally. Do I want this device, which is primarily going to be the device that I allow my kids to play with, to be built around push a button and now you can chat with people? Now, I agree, Khalif, what you said about, hey, I like the fact that Nintendo tends to create walled gardens and tends to make safety a priority. And I believe that parental controls will be robust, and I will be looking into that when I, you know, eventually get one of these as well. But like, that's not what I'm looking for out of a Nintendo handheld at this moment. And like I said, like all these weird things where it's like, yeah, it's a handheld, but also there's this, you're gonna have a cord leading to a camera, and the mouse controls, I guess, are gonna be cool, but I think you're right, Christian, that I'm curious how many things are actually going to be taking advantage of them in any kind of meaningful way. It's just, yes, Nintendo does weird things. I feel like this is not just weird, but also kind of disappointing for me, just on a pure hardware level. But I maybe think, I'm being too cynical.
I think a little bit you are. I think a little bit you are, but your feelings are valid. I understand, you know, I'm not saying like, hey, don't feel that way. Our job is to be hype. That is not our job. And I think on this show, we do a good job of not always being hype. But I think the price point thing is an interesting one. So whether or not Nintendo already rolled in some of expected tariff pricing into this, I think there's a very strong argument that they did. And then the actual tariffs that came out, again, by the time you're listening to this, they might be gone. And who knows the world we'll live in by the time you're listening to this, even if you're listening to it the moment it comes out, the millisecond it comes out, who knows? But I think a comparable price comparison for this device is the Steam Deck. And so the cheapest Steam Deck you can buy is LCD. It has a 1280 by 800 LCD display. So it's 16 by 10 versus 16 by 9, like the Switch, but also, you know, 7 inches diagonal. It has a 60 hertz refresh rate, and it's $400. And the Switch 2 is that with the dock, and the little, does it have the little grippy things in it this time? I think it has a little, I don't remember if it has a little, and the little grippy things attachment thing in it. And so if you wanted to buy the Steam Deck dock, that's $80. So to get the cheapest Steam Deck,
that's nuts.
It is nuts. To get the cheapest Steam Deck with a dock, where the dock itself doesn't do anything other than connectivity, is $480. The Switch 2 dock unlocks 4K output to a larger device. And I'm trying to think of the Steam Deck. No, Steam Deck doesn't have a camera. Does it have a built-in mic? I don't remember if it has a built-in mic because I never use it. I think it does.
I think it does.
I don't never use Steam Deck. I don't never use a built-in mic on the Steam Deck. But it feels very comparable to me. And the Switch 2 has tech in it that the Steam Deck doesn't, in terms of what it's able to do DLSS. It's able to do on-chip ray tracing of some form or function. And so while I'm not saying, hey, hurrah, $450, let me hear you say it. Woo, we love it. I think, unfortunately, it makes a lot of sense. And let's not forget, this is also the world where the PS5 Pro is, for the people in the back, a lot of money. you know?
Sure. Yeah. No, I agreed. I think the PS5 Pro is at a price point that is just seemed insane. And again, all this stuff, you know, again, is in the context now of it's all going up and it's all even more expensive. And you're right. Maybe $450 was anticipatory of some sort of, you know, forthcoming tariff. And then they just got smacked so hard that by the insanity of the tariff.
They're about to have a nice night, and then someone texted them and said, "Can you join us yes, for a podcast?"
That's right. But you know, like I'm just kind of trying to be clear-eyed about this. And as much as I'm excited about Switch 2, and as long as we've been anticipating it, I just can't help but be a little disappointed. And $80 as the new price point for games, and having, for example, a Breath of the Wild for Switch 2 at $80, which evidently, if you buy the physical version, is just the original Switch version on a cartridge and then a code to download the upgrade, that's bonkers. And it's actually offensive, I think. I think it's not a great precedent. I know the video game prices are going to go up, and who knows now, you know, $80 might even be the floor, but it just seems like there's so many weird decisions here that I cannot get behind, even if, and I, like I said, I'm making a real distinction between talking about the system and talking about the software, because I think there's a lot to be excited about with the software, but I think there's some real legitimate gripes here, because this doesn't feel like a system for 8 years from now. And maybe they don't have any desire for it to be.
I mean, neither did the Switch when it launched.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair too, I think we have seen the writing on the wall. If folks have been paying attention, they have seen the writing on the wall for a minute. You've seen in the conversations between base units and their mid-gen refreshes. We've seen add-on content that would basically get you to be able to play those things on those consoles as well. You know, we've seen, I have a lot of friends who work at Nintendo. I have a lot of friends who are big Nintendo fans, but also, like, Nintendo fans will buy anything, and it's honest. Like, it's not like this has also been a new thing for those folks either, where they have been served a lot of retro games that should be on those consoles at a very cheap price, be sold back to them at a much kind of expanded one. So I think Nintendo has a really interesting space, because they can get away with things that no one else can, because the fandom is extremely fervent and extremely loyal and extremely willing to drop down money because it's a Mario. Right. And that means a lot. I think, you can use that in whichever ways you want, and you can kind of, try to figure out, you know, what that means for you as a consumer. But I think, you know, we are all in an ecosystem where we are using each other's ability to leverage all the time. And to a certain extent, you, all three of us on this podcast, can say we're not going to go buy a Switch 2 until the price comes down. The millions of other folks who are going to buy that Switch 2 when it comes out are going to usurp any of the power that we potentially might have had to move those numbers in a feasible, reasonable right. way. So, you know, in a weird way, you know, the beauty of the understanding that politics moves everything is one that is collective, that talks about all of us being able to understand the power that we have and the powers that we don't. And I think that's a really good thing that has come out of this discussion over the pricing here and what the potential is going to be for the future of games in a much bigger way. I still think folks haven't understood the reckoning that is potentially coming in that conversation too. So yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff to dig into in terms of all of those pinpoints. But at the end of the day, you have to pony up some extra money if you want to get into the ecosystem. And that's a real thing.
I just think it's nuts that they're going to ask $80 for a version of a game that's been out however many years, that isn't even in the box when you take it home.
Right.
That's nuts.
I think they've talked a little, at least I've, again, we've had a lot of, you know, back and forth conversations on the internet about like what's real and what's not. I think some of that is, you know, it will be on the cart, but yeah. You know, that, that even that being a practice is still a mind boggling thing, especially when we have discussions around stores and ecosystems and all of those pieces too, of like, we thought the digital future was good. And I am a big proponent of the digital future. I am not a physical game person anymore. But the understanding was that, oh, well, you don't have to produce that, so it should be cheaper. Yeah. That's not been the case at all.
That didn't happen at all.
It didn't happen at all.
That's not Nintendo's fault. That's everybody.
But nobody, that's everybody's fault. That. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that that's a part of it too, is like, I think, you know, we as folks who have been in this space and we've been gaming forever, we've seen every iteration of the space change. And a lot of the things that we hoped were going to be movers and differentiators are not.
Yeah.
And those things have not come to pass. And we are all still trying to figure out ways to not have to pay the piper for everything. And the piper is like, nah, son, that ain't the way it works. Nah, see, it's not the way it works, kid. So, you know, what are we going to do? We're
going to play this pipe for free.
You're right. What does this look like? Yeah. So
the other thing that I forgot to mention in my little negativity party, my little pooper party, I hate to be the party pooper. I don't like being the party pooper. But the other thing is that evidently the Switch 2's battery life is going to be about half of what the current Switch is.
Mm.
So as little as 2 hours, depending on the game. They say between 2 and 6.5 hours on a single charge. The floor when the original Switch was 8 years ago, when the first Switch came out, was about 2.5. They said 2.5 hours. So this is, you know, and that was, who knows if that was accurate, but that was what they said. The current Switch that you would buy now, the OLED version, or the even the one you would buy that's in stores now of the LCDs, is like double that. So they have, you know, over the lifespan of the Switch, they have improved the tech and improved battery life. But this is going to be back to, you know, if you're playing a game that really uses all the bells and whistles, I'm thinking like a Cyberpunk or, you know, some of these bigger games, I think you're going to probably expect 2 hours of battery life for in handheld mode, right? That's also a big bummer. That's a bummer. These are the things that we deal with handhelds now, right? The Steam Deck, again, Christian, you're right to make that the comparison point, is also that, the OLED version of the Steam Deck improved upon it. But the Steam Deck that I have, and I think that you have, is around there. So it, you know, it gets that paltry battery life as well. But these are all things that I think just kind of bum me out about this Switch 2. It does not bowl me for as long as we've waited for this thing. It just doesn't feel like a home run on a hardware level. All right.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I hear you, and I'm not saying you're wrong about anything, but I also feel like for me, it's a home run on hardware, and pricing is difficult. And I don't want to necessarily, we can get into the software pricing. I do feel like that's a little different than just purely objectively about this hardware. But I think it's what we were hearing the Switch 2 was going to be for years, you know, and I guess we got some confirmation too that they did seriously consider the Super Switch name for it.
Yeah, how cool is that? They talked about it. They wanted to do that. It was right there, guys.
And that's what this feels like. You know, it really feels like a Super Nintendo, a Game Boy Advanced. It is all the things we loved, now better. Like every aspect, aside from OLED, which wasn't a launch version. I feel like, and maybe battery life, if you want to, you know, get in a fight, die on that hill, that half an hour battery life from launch Switch to this Switch is that big of a difference. But everything else about this console, everything else is better. Everything else is better.
Well, yeah, 8 years later.
Shaking his finger at
so.
Me, though. Hold on, he's about to hit me with some New York Knicks ankle fall.
Jeff to reply because I have a question for both of you. So I want Jeff to reply first.
Well, I was just going to say, 8 years later, it should be better. Like that's like the idea that there's a chance that it would not be better is like, but 8 years.
But you're upset that it's like this is a PlayStation 4. It's a PlayStation 5. It's the thing, but better. And doing the things that only, you know, Nintendo does in terms of
Okay, I want to hear what Khalif has to say, but let me just retort to that real quick. Actually, you know what? We're going to take a quick break for a sponsor.
I love it. I love the cliffhanger.
We're going to afford these tariffs, baby. And we'll be right back right after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Raycon Everyday Earbuds. Christian, it's getting close to Mother's Day. It's right around the corner. Mother's Day.
What?
Yeah, I know. We got mothers that we're married to. We got mothers that gave birth to us. We got a lot of moms to worry about. These moms, let me tell you, they're busy. They're running around. They're thinking about people. They're juggling work, family. They're all they want is some serenity now. All they want is to be in a nice place where all the sounds of their life can be blotted out. You know what I mean?
No, they just want to listen to our sweet voices more as they listen to the DLC podcast. So when they're not with us, they have us in their ear holes.
I think you have a different mom than I
have. We want to give them a way to be able to listen to us even when they're not with us, Jeff. That's what we want to do. That's what we want to do.
This Mother's Day, treat your mom to either of those two things, either a serene, lovely, quiet, sheltered ear experience where she can put on whatever nice music or anything she wants, or our dumb voices, whatever your mom might want, whatever any mom in your life might want, give her the choice, give her the gift of Raycon's Everyday Earbuds, the perfect gift for your mom, for any mom, whether she's going to the gym or she's busy at work or taking phone calls, call your mom. Seriously, call your mom. Give your mom the gift of premium audio that goes where she goes. The latest model of the Raycon Everyday Earbuds are better than ever. With 32 hours of battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets her pair with two devices at once.
You're saying the new version is better than the old version and battery life specifically? Among
yeah,
other things?
What are you talking about? Your mom is not going to ask you for Bluetooth help ever again. And you mentioned battery, Christian. The Raycon's quick charge function, just 10 minutes of charging yields 90 minutes of battery because moms don't got time. Ain't nobody got time for that. Charge your earbuds. These earbuds also come with active noise cancellation. With woohoo, my wife would love that. The noise in our house, active noise cancellation. It's often difficult to find such an accessible price point that you find on the Raycon Everyday Earbuds, which start at just half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's Everyday Earbuds come in a spectrum of vibrant colors to match your mom's style. I have bright red, but I think my mom would prefer the blue. Christian, what color of the Everyday Earbuds did you get?
Forest green. Mm. And then there's also a limited edition orange peel, which I do not have, but it looks real nice. I've been liking pops of color in things more and more because everything else kind of is just bland and blah.
Yeah.
The forest green is really nice, and the orange peel has a really nice pop to it.
My favorite thing about that is that I don't lose them. Like, if all of my electronics are black, they just blend in with things, and I lose them. And so having a pop of color means you get to see where it is in your house. And if your mom ends up not liking her Raycons, they offer a 30-day happiness guarantee return policy. No questions asked. So do it. Go to buyraycon.com/DLC right now. Get 20% off site-wide. I was going to say statewide. No, site-wide. 20% off site-wide. Right now, Raycon is offering up to 20% off site-wide when you go to buyraycon.com/DLC. That's buyraycon.com/DLC. Do it. For your mom. Okay, my retort, real quick, to what we were talking about, is that maybe I'm wrong. I can be completely wrong about this, but my headcanon, my conception of where Nintendo, and not just Nintendo, but the Switch in particular, has positioned itself, even back when it was first launched, is the kid-friendly, family-friendly, affordable alternative, right? Yes, it's the place to play Nintendo first party, and that's enough. That's enough for me. It's enough for most people. It's enough for all those people you were talking about, Khalif, who are gonna buy it no matter what. And that's great. I have to have one of these because there's like always going to be an amazing Nintendo game that only they could make and is a must play. So yes, I get it. But I don't think I think about it in the same way as it's PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5 or next Xbox or whatever. I do think that their niche, their corner of the market is trust us, come to us. This is going to be less powerful than the state of the art right now, but it's also going to be affordable, accessible. It's going to work in a way that these other things don't. And it just feels like this is still behind the times as far as power goes and capabilities go, but it is not behind the times as far as cost goes. And it bums me out. Like, this is the device that is aimed at families, is aimed at kids. I have two Switches, right? I've never had two of any other well, that's not true. I get pro versions, so I guess that's a lie. But you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a different tacit contract that they get into with their audience that I feel like has been slightly broken here. And it's not just price. It's like all of these dumb things. It's like we've got cartridges still, but it's not on the cartridge. We got backwards compatibility, but not for these 120 games. It's like all of this stuff. We got a camera, but like it works in a weird way. And we got this button for chat, but it's like, I don't know. All of it just felt a little disappointing to me. I just have to be honest about it. So anyway, Khalif, you had something you wanted to add.
Does this make you more or less excited for what Microsoft is going to be bringing to the table with their handheld, supposedly, that's going to be coming out supposedly soon? Because I think for me, the conversation seeing this changes a little bit of that for me as well, where I'm like, if Nintendo, the company that usually goes cheaper, is already out the box coming in hot with a price that is going to be, you know, more than what the tech actually kind of gives you, I was really excited for what Microsoft is potentially going to be bringing to the table with what they have. We've already seen glimpses of it with the Asus ROG handheld stuff and Steam Deck as a entity in that space now.
Yeah.
But I feel like now they have to even go a little bit harder in the paint for me to get really excited about where this new kind of handheld market is going to be laying. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about does that change anything for you in that conversation?
That's a really interesting thing. Christian, why don't you answer that first?
The Legion Go starts at $700.
But it's also like this huge, right?
That's not the Texas State Fair belt buckle. You know, that's not that one. It's a big boy, but it ain't that big. I think the Steam Deck in the handheld gaming space is such a home run that I think that's the thing that's tripping you up a little bit, Jeff. I truly do. I mean, that LCD Steam Deck price, when it came out, there were leaks about what it was going to be, and people were overestimating what the Steam Deck was going to cost. And I don't know to what extent Valve subsidized the Steam Deck or the component breakdown or what that device cost, you know, those couple of years ago when it came out. But that device is a home run because it was so unexpected with what it was able to do. It has this beautiful interface. It plays a lot of your Steam games. You know, talk about a list of 100 games excluded. Steam's pitch for the Steam Deck is your games anywhere. Mm-mm. No,
well,
it's not.
But that's apples and oranges. You're talking about tens of thousands of games.
I'm talking about marketing. I'm talking about how they positioned their own device. Mm. They positioned their own device. But we, as consumers, a lot of us were like, oh my gosh, it does play a lot of them and I don't need to do anything. This is incredible. I've had these games locked away on my computer for so long now, and now I'm able to play them, so many of them, anywhere. And it was a real value add. I think people expected less and got more. And I think for some reasons that you've mentioned, Jeff, but I think a lot of people are coming into the Switch 2 with unrealistic expectations for what it should or could be, and are carrying that with them because the Steam Deck, I think, rewrote the game in so many ways. And so to answer your question specifically, Khalif, is I think that Microsoft is in a tough spot now with the rumored they're going to do a partner device first with one of these other companies that does a PC game styled handheld, and then with their own device, because Xbox has positioned themselves as all of your games. They did a great job. Xbox has done a great job this generation bringing old games forward and giving you updated versions of games for free, where you just you buy one, get the best version of it, right? Whatever it is, you have the crappiest, oldest version of some game, but you play it on your Xbox Series console. It's going to get updated textures, frame rates, all of this stuff for some of those games. Great job with that. Great job. The UI, it's gotten worse, but like pretty good. And for terms of where Xbox UI has been. And the handheld, those expectations, I think, have to carry over to the handheld. And if they don't, it's going to feel like a real fumble. So where the Nintendo Switch 2 is and what it does, Ka, I do think it puts pressure on Microsoft now to knock it out of the park, because now you have two competing devices, the Steam Deck and the Switch 2, that I think are really good. And the Steam Deck fundamentally rewrote the rules. And if Xbox can't do that, I think it's going to hurt.
I guess I think about it differently, and this may be a more of a me thing. And you know, we've had a week here. It's been a tumultuous week, but I've had a week to chew on this, you know, or not a week, but you know, several days to chew on this.
You've had 5 seconds, which is enough all the time we get these days.
But I mean, I feel like I'm still sort of working through my thoughts on all this stuff. So I know a lot of the people were saying, "Oh, you're being so cynical, Jeff." I'm just working through my thoughts in real time here. And I think this may not be fair of me, but I guess I think about this sort of, you know, tacit contract, this bargain that these companies are making with their consumers slightly differently, in that whatever this Xbox handheld ends up being, it's not going to be like the main console that they're selling, right? It's and the same thing with the Steam Deck. It's like, yes, it's Valve's main console, but it's it's like, hey, you've got PC games. Now you got them on the go. What? That's amazing. Hey, you got Xbox Game Pass? Now you got that on the go. What? Sweet. Nintendo is slightly different. It's like, this is our whole shebang, baby. This is the ball of wax right here. This is our main console. And so I think about it differently. And I think, ironically, what I think about is it should be more accessible. I feel like that's the baseline that the Switch established for Nintendo was like, we're not competing on a power level with the other guys. We're competing on an accessibility level. And I just don't think that's what this hardware communicates to me, at least initially, at least right now. It doesn't communicate, get in here. It's like all these weird caveats. It's like, use it as a mouse. What? What? Where? What? Buy a camera and just hook that up to this thing. What? Why? It just feels like, all of these things feel very the messaging feels very unclear to me, as far as, which is, I wanted to point out, I was going to point it out on Wednesday, but you weren't there, Christian, for me to. One of my predictions on our prediction episode this last year was that the next Mario 3 Mario game is going to be multiplayer focused. And I almost said the Switch 2 is going to be multiplayer focused. That was what I originally wrote down. And then I just kind of chickened out and put that. But it's like, that's the case. It's like this weird, the thrust of what this thing is communicating, I feel like the thrust of what I got from that presentation was, we're in the multiplayer business, baby, which feels A, so far behind the curve, which of course that's Nintendo, that's fine. But then the like implementation of it is, I mean, do you really believe that you'll be able to have a blender on and talk clearly with this thing across the room? Do you really believe that?
That's the first thing I'm going to try.
I mean, do you like the like slideshow sharing of your, all of this stuff I feel like is just out of the box behind the times. Is it better than sitting my phone next to my, you know, like the way that people play Splatoon now or whatever? Yes, it is. But it's still not contemporary. It's not state of the art. Anyway, I hate being negative. And I want to transition to the actual games that they talked about, because that's the one thing I'm not negative about. Because I thought a lot of the stuff they showed looked really fun. So let's do that. Because I hate being a negative Nancy. I don't want
to
be.
I think they are reasonable. I mean, I think it's reasonable to kind of give it that view, though. But I do want to end on that part before we go to software. I think we're in this really interesting layer of flux between all of the companies, and especially Nintendo catching up. I think Nintendo has proven that it has nailed the family-friendly parts. And it has nailed the community parts in a big way. The thing that has always been their Achilles heel has been, can we get all of those pieces to feel cohesive enough for you to feel like you are getting the same or even close to the same experiences as the other consoles in the ecosystem? And that part is still, you know, we don't know yet. Yeah. We haven't seen it. Like, I think they have enough technology to get the frame rate fixed on the camera stuff. I think the ideas around the codes and, you know, what are you getting, a digital code versus a physical piece of hardware, I think those are going to be, you know, kind of the same. But with all of that said, it still goes back to, can I afford it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's going to be their biggest thing that they have to try to not only figure out a way with all the wildness of the American administration, but just like, once you have said that thing out loud, it is really hard to pull back on it. We saw what happened with Sony when they tried to do that, and it didn't work well for them.
Right.
And does that raise again the floor for everybody else? So I think there's a lot of conversations there.
I mean, we saw already the pre-order did happen in the UK, and it sold out in seconds. So, I mean, as you guys rightly pointed out, the demand is there. And I certainly, you know, hey, if I could get one of these things, I probably would. Although, for the first time, I've been like, man, maybe I wait a little bit. I want an OLED version of this thing, which I feel, again, cynically, I feel like, you know, it's kind of like what Apple tends to do. It's like, we'll incrementally add these things. We got the roadmap for where this is headed. We're not going to give it to you all next year. You know what I mean? I feel like maybe that's the case with Switch 2, is that there's going to be an OLED version a year or two in. I don't know. All right. Again, let's get to the positive stuff, because I think the big marquee game, the launch title of launch titles, the pack-in game, is this tech demo thing? No, I'm just kidding. No, it's Mario Kart World. Mario Kart World, going to be a bundle, the $500 version, if it remains $500 here in the United States. Who knows? But Mario Kart World, an open world Mario Kart that looks like Burnout Paradise. I think it looks awesome. And there's like grinding now. There's all kinds of, it looks like there's secrets and crazy things to do. We saw people playing it in the treehouse. This game looks really, really fun to me. What do you think, Khalif?
Yeah, it's exciting to see what the next version of this is going to wind up being. I think, you know, again, Nintendo, when it comes to their IP, they understand the job that they have to do, and they nail it pretty much every time. Again, excited that they're going to have some more, you know, multiplayer connectivity here in a way that feels fun. And again, you know, if I were to buy the whole system, I probably would buy the camera, because I do like the stuff. I do want to be able to talk to people when they do it and play and talk crap.
Yeah.
So really excited for that. I think it's going to be fun to see how they roll that out, and then also kind of roll out the roster of characters that'll be in there as well. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, people picking apart all the images we've seen up to this point, and the, you know, it looks like it's going to be just a massive game, and I love that Nintendo isn't just, hey, more Mario Kart. We're actually rethinking the formula fundamentally of what Mario Kart is. I think that's cool. They're always so good at pushing the needle and trying to do something new with these surefire hit franchises, which you don't have to do. If they're surefire hits, you don't have to change anything. And yet Nintendo tends to always push themselves creatively, which I love. And between that and Donkey Kong Bonanza, I think it's really cool to see a next gen system, not just pushing next gen-ness in its visuals. They really do feel like the fundamental play capabilities of these titles couldn't have been done on Switch One, right? Right. The number of people that you're going to be interacting with in Mario Kart World, the sort of size and scope of it, and Donkey Kong Bonanza too, like destructibility, all that stuff feels like, oh, that's the thing that Switch 2 is bringing, not just, hey, it's prettier. So I got to give them credit for that too. Christian, your thoughts on Mario Kart World?
I think it looks absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Bring me that Forza Horizon level of always exploring to Mario Kart, a series that I think kicked off this idea of exploring tracks. Yes, there were arcade racers before that would have shortcuts and things, but Mario Kart as a franchise I thought was always really rich with, you know, risk it on Rainbow Road and take that jump, or in Wario Stadium, I think also had a really nice launch you could do, and finding these little secrets. And now if they bring that over into this larger Forza Horizon Burnout Paradise style game, I think is hours of extra enjoyment, but it also still has the traditional cup race in it. If for folks that want that, like this feels like the Mario Kart version of Smash Brothers, of the last Smash Brothers, where it's like they are bringing everything to this, so much so that we don't know if we'll be able to make another one. Like this could be the one. And I think that, you know, being able to race with your friends and then going out of a race and driving around an open world and kind of just putzing around and finding things and rolling into a new race. It's so all those things that keep you playing. And Jeff, you mentioned like, oh, this is connectivity. I think a big part of what Nintendo is competing with is Roblox and the crappy chat on that. You know, yeah. Or using FaceTime, or parents feeling comfortable with that, or Fortnite chat, where so much of Fortnite, at least among even my friends when we play, and then also my kids and their friends and older kids playing, is the hang. And I think Nintendo is really embracing the hang with Mario Kart World, and anything, it's the attention economy, right? So anything that's going to keep you playing and not bouncing back to a menu, as it looks like Mario Kart World is positioned, I think is very reflective of the times of what games are today. And they're doing that while also giving the old school Mario approach. I mean, I think this game's going to be huge on Switch 2 once adoption happens. I think it's going to be huge.
No doubt about that. Yeah, this is going to be a massive, massive hit. But I mean, again, this is, I hate to keep coming back to price, but this is why it irks me a bit that these prices are going up so dramatically on software, because, you know, Mario Kart is what the Mario Kart on Switch has sold, what, like 50 million copies. These are things that are going to make lots of money and they're going to recoup their costs. They don't have to be priced this way, right? You've made your money on Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. You don't have to price it this way. You're in the black. It's all gravy now. You can put this thing out on a new system, this however many year old game. I mean, Breath of the Wild is a Wii U game. $80 for a up-resed Wii U game, right? That's nuts. Anyway, I told you I was going to be positive in this segment.
Spicy. Sorry. I like it.
I have a hard time with this, but yeah. I do think Donkey Kong Bonanza looks really fun. I said, Nintendo's making a knack.
And this is the Mario Odyssey team. Is that right?
Is it? I didn't catch that. I think they've been cagey about the team behind Bonanza.
Yeah, I don't think it's retro, and I believe, or word on the street, I think, is that it might be folks from the Odyssey team. But it looks
fun.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I'm curious your thoughts on how Nintendo is rolling out their launch lineup, because this is a month after the system comes out. And I thought it was interesting, too, how they rephrased, like, Mario Kart. It was like, available on the same day as the system. Like, they don't even call it a launch game. You know, it's like available day and date. This is available July 17th. This is available. Like, is this a launch game, or is this just another game?
I mean, it's got to be a launch game. I'm thinking it, and don't they have a pack-in for a version of this anyway? It's like that is a bundled version of the system and the game. So I'm assuming
Donkey Kong. No, it's just Mario.
Oh, not
Mario
Donkey Kart. Kong. I'm thinking Mario Kart.
Sorry. Yeah, Mario Kart's a launch game, but it's available day.
Donkey Kong is like a month July. Later.
Coming in July. Yeah. Yes, I can. Oh, I'm reading things on the thing. Anyway, yeah. Weird. Yes, definitely weird. I mean, the idea is the assumption is that you'll play Mario Kart and get back to some of the older games that don't work on your new system to come forward. Maybe that's the idea that they're trying to kind of engage with, is like, you know, get ourselves in a good spot. Everybody gets Mario Kart. And then once you're kind of ready for the next thing, we'll start to drip out some of the other titles. It is weird that you don't have that major kind of just like bumping up of all of the main, at least two or three of the main IPs in that space. But I wonder if, because I don't remember if the third party lineup, how many of those games are going to be dropping at launch.
I'll read the launch lineup. Let's take another quick break for a sponsor, and then I'll read the launch lineup right after these messages. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Raycon Everyday Earbuds. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! Squarespace! The all-in-one website platform designed to help you stand out and succeed online. That's what it's doing for us. We're standing out. We're succeeding online. Whether you're just starting out or you're scaling your business, Squarespace gives you everything you need to claim your domain, showcase your offerings with a professional website, grow your brand, and get paid all in one place. Christian, you're the one who built DLCpod.com using Squarespace's tool set. Easy to use stuff, just so lickety split. The reason that we look so rad online.
Some people might say we look totally rad online, Jeff. People might say that. But you do.
Some people might not even remember that anymore, because it's been so long. But
the best part is you get a professional looking website without needing to be a professional, right? Like that's the implied part of that handshake.
Yeah.
You have a professional looking website and in no way, shape or form need to be a professional at making websites.
That's right. And it's not just a pretty face. Squarespace sites are functional too. They give you everything you need to offer services and get paid all in one place. From consultations to events and experiences, you can showcase your offerings with a customizable website designed to attract clients and grow your business. Get paid on time with professional on-brand invoicing and online payments. Plus, streamline your workflow with built-in appointment scheduling and email marketing tools. And with Squarespace's collection of cutting-edge design tools, even Christian and I, anybody off the street can build a bespoke online presence that perfectly fits their brand or business. Because you start with Blueprint AI, that's Squarespace's AI-enhanced website builder, and you get a fully custom website in just a few steps, using basic information about your industry, your goals, your personality to generate premium quality content and personalized design recommendations. And Squarespace also offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates with options for every use and category. No matter where you start, your website is flexible to what you need, with intuitive drag-and-drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, on-brand AI content, and more ways to list what you offer with no experience required. Get it! get in there. If you don't have a website and you need one, oh my goodness, there's only one place to go. And that is squarespace.com/DLC. It gets you a free trial. And then when you're ready to launch, use our offer code DLC to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Again, squarespace.com/DLC and promo code DLC gets you 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace. There's none better. All right, so here is the actual launch day lineup. So this is, you know, June 4th, supposedly, which is
5th,
excuse me, June 5th. Used to be, you know, this used to be the benchmark for how successful a console launch is. Like, what's its launch lineup? I don't know if that's still the case as much anymore, because a lot of things are backwards compatible now, so it's kind of all bets are off. But here is the launch games. Street Fighter VI. With new exclusive modes. It's got the 26 playable characters, the Years 1 and 2 Fighters editions come with it. Split Fiction, Hogwarts Legacy.
Legacy.
Weird way of saying that. Hogwarts Legacy, the Switch 2 version. Hitman World of Assassination Signature Edition. Bravely Default Fighting Fairy HD Remaster. Yakuza 0 Director's Cut. Deltarune Chapters 1 through 4. Cyberpunk 2077 Ultimate Edition. Civilization 7 with new mouse controls for console. Survival Kids, which I'm not really sure what that is. Kunitsugami Path of the Goddess. Puyo Puyo Tetris 2S. Rune Factory Guardians of Azuma. Nobunaga's Ambition Awakening Complete Edition. Fast Fusion. Fortnite. And Arcade Archives 2 Ridge Racer.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good lineup for a new system dropping. I think, you know, big shout out to folks on the Nintendo third party side, because I think they have shored up a lot of that conversation for themselves over the past couple of years. And this is a very strong lineup that, if you really look at it, you definitely do have something for everyone in a much broader way, which I think is cool.
If they don't already have it.
If you don't already have it. But I think that's the thing too, right? You nailed it. There's a lot of stuff that people probably already have. I think the standout here in terms of things that are really new is Deltarune, because you get new chapters.
Yeah.
And that's new. Civ on that small of a screen, that's going to be wild. I mean, that seems like, I don't know if I'd be playing that mobile. And you know, I think the big standout here for how that's going to work actually is Split Fiction for me. Is that is a very co-op game where you need to have two people playing it. And who else is going to have a Switch?
Are you going to be able to play it?
I imagine it's cross-play. I would guess it's cross-play.
Yeah. I mean, you usually have one person can buy it and another person can play it. That's the way that they've been doing that from their work. But still, like,
I wonder if you'll be able to play that with a single Joy-Con, like couch co-op style.
That would be really smart.
Yeah,
if they were able to do that.
I don't know how you would do that exactly, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So strong lineup.
The Joy-Cons, by the way, are $80. It's not cheap for the new Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the only part.
You can buy a single Joy-Con now. I don't know if they sold them in individual left or right SKUs for Switch. Maybe you guys can correct me. I don't know if they did. But
I don't think so.
You can buy just the left one or just the right one now for $50 a piece. Mm. And then together it's 80.
For ambidextrous, it's $40.
This is the only part of it that I am a little negative on. I think that, again, I think the idea of launch lineups is something that the industry is trying to get away from. Mm. Because it also at launch is the GameCube expansion, which has Wind Waker and F-Zero GX and all these great GameCube games included. If you have that Nintendo Pass and plus expansion pass, Nintendo Switch Online plus expansion pass, beautiful name. But as a launch day lineup, I feel like if you've only had a Switch, maybe it's appealing, but I feel like even then it still feels weird to be like, yay, I'm buying an 8-month-old game that I haven't had access to and I've been pining to play it. That part feels a little different to me, but I think the way Nintendo wants to pitch it is this broader launch window. Yeah. And then I start to get more excited. But things rushing out to the store to get, you know, am I getting Gun? Am I getting Perfect Dark Zero? Am I getting Call of Duty? Am I getting Tony Hawk? Well, I think here I'm getting Mario Kart.
Yeah. Back in the day, the only way you could get it was, you know, you go to the Best Buy or the GameStop or whatever, and there's, you have to buy three games with it. Like, that, we're not going to sell it to you without three games. Mm. Back in the day. Mm-hmm. So you always had that, like, oh, I guess I'll get Fusion Frenzy also.
Bill Gates' favorite game?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so, you know, there's a much, as you said, there's a much larger window of games that come within, like, the first 3 months. Lots of third-party stuff, lots of ports. And you know, they showed some cool stuff. They showed Kirby Air Riders, which I think is going to be pretty neat. Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment. And this really awesome drag and drive game that's, I've never seen anybody do a game built around wheelchair sports, which I just think is really wonderful that they're doing that. It just warmed my heart to see that given time. And I also think it's a cool concept to control it with the double mouse things. That's really awesome.
I love that, but it's also like a very weird thing because of the fact that most people will be playing that on their legs.
I know. Oh, God. I didn't even think of that.
I just thought of that right now. And I was like, that's kind of weird, but I get it.
And though the Megaton, if this were E3, it is a Megaton, is an exclusive FromSoft game.
Yes.
Of all systems to be getting it.
That's huge.
And it's kind of PvE, you know, it's more multiplayer-y as it's come out now after that first trailer drop. But I mean, this is massive. To me, this is the, hey, we have your adult games also. We are not a kiddie console. It's only dated as 2026. Also, Metro Prime 4 still doesn't have a hard date, which bothers me. But the Duskbloods is massive. I mean, absolutely. They're coming off a, what did Elden Ring sell, call like 30 million copies? Something like that.
Ridiculous amounts of copies.
Ridiculous amount of copies. And they're like, hey, our next announced game, I know they have the Elden Ring multiplayer game coming, but like our next announced new IP name game is exclusive to Nintendo Switch 2. Massive.
I agree. That really was surprising and pretty cool. Obviously, you know, that's not for me the biggest thing, but I could totally recognize what a huge deal it is and how exciting that is for a Nintendo console to get something that has been, you know, traditionally a Sony exclusive kind of situation. And it really isn't a kid's game, as you said. We'll find out more about the details of that game as it gets closer. But I do think that was a huge highlight of the presentation for sure. Any other games that you guys saw? I mean, they showed, you know, all kinds of stuff coming, Tony Hawk and, you know, all kinds of, stuff coming up, over the next, you know, through the end of the year. Although I suspect we haven't seen the big fall Switch 2 game announcement yet. Mm. Because for the first party Nintendo stuff, even Air Riders, it says later in 2025. I don't think Kirby Air Riders is going to be what they're going to be hanging their holiday hats on.
You don't think it's Pokemon?
Pokemon?
Cross-gen Pokemon?
I suspect we're going to get a big announcement at some point of a Switch 2 holiday game.
They'll get Smash. They'll do a Smash for Switch 2, which will be huge for them.
Is that just an update? That $80 update of the...
Current Smash has only been out. It's been out for less than, and I'm terrible with dates, but I think less than 2 or 3 years. It could be more than that, but I think
it's pre-COVID.
Is it pre-COVID?
It's pre-COVID. Yeah, we remember that black hole we fell into. It's pre-COVID.
I don't remember where I am.
I definitely played Smash on Switch in an office with a bunch of people, which is pre-COVID.
I mean, it would make sense from a like big game perspective that, you know, people were going to jump in on. I don't know. Again, it then goes back to, again, what is the feature set and what is the thing that you're going to be adding to that game that is different than what you could have done on the previous one?
Yeah.
And that's where it gets sticky again. You know,
also, I wonder if it's just an upgrade. It's literally just the 4K, better frame rate, 120 frame. Now you can play it at 120 FPS, you know, 1080, 120.
Could be that. Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious. We'll see. There's a lot of question marks still, I think, and a lot of them have to do with our government. Are we going to be able to get these things? Are they still going to be $450, $500? All that is an open question. You may, listening to this, already know the answer. But, you know, I think for me, more of a mixed bag than I anticipated my reaction to be. But ultimately, you know, 2-3 years from now, when this thing is kind of firing on all cylinders and we're getting, you know, Mario's and Zelda's and all kinds of things for it, I think it's going to be a pretty awesome system, I hope. But I don't think for as long as the delay has been getting here, right? Because Christian, you and I have been predicting we'd get a Switch 2 announcement for 4 years, you know? As long as it took to get here, I just can't help but feel a little underwhelmed.
And here I'm thinking we're getting a better version of what we currently had that for the past 4 years has given me a personal favorite game of the year, I think every year. And now in the last 6 months of this year, I'm going to get a new Mario Kart that looks like it could be the best one ever. I'm going to get a new Donkey Kong game, which I know this isn't a retro game. This isn't Tropical Freeze, but it looks like it's kind of embracing that lineage. And I'm going to get a new Metroid Prime game that I can run at 120 frames per second. Like this next 6 months for me from Nintendo, I think is an absolute, absolute home run. I wish it was cheaper, but like from the content of what I'm getting, I think it's a home run.
Yeah. All right. Well, I knew this conversation was going to last a long time. We have done it, but we do have some games to talk about. So let's get into our playlist. We're going to take one last break for a sponsor and then jump into the playlist right after these messages. All right. Here's the games that we have been playing today, not in June, but right now. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Kyle, you have been playing a game that I am very much anticipating. Some other folks have been playing it. You can get it in early access as of our recording, but I have not done so. I'm going to probably be playing it next week. But you have had quite a long time, I think, with South of Midnight, right?
Yes, I have finished South of Midnight. It is now 2 a.m. in my world. you can check out the review on our YouTube channel.
North of 2 a.m.
It is now sunrise.
I stepped on your URL. Where's the review?
It's youtube.com/spawnonme is the main one. You can check out all of our reviews there. I love South of Midnight. I was lucky enough to go to Montreal to go check out the game early with the folks over at Compulsion Studios, talk to the CEO, talk to the dev team, talk to some of the folks who did the VO and actors and actresses on the project. I was already really excited for what this game was going to wind up being and just like hyped for what, you know, what was it trying to give people in terms of the visual aesthetic, which matches up kind of what we've traditionally known with some really fantastic stop animation stuff that they've done in that game. And, you know, after, you know, finishing it, it just really spoke to me in so many different ways. I think, you know, it's a beautiful game. It's stunning. I think the music and art direction are really smart. You know, when people try to explain what this game is, it's kind of hard because it's a variance on a bunch of different things. It feels like a kind of action game mixed with almost a musical, which is interesting. It feels like there are moments where I think of this game being set because it's set in the rural South in a space that we don't really get a chance to see often. We don't really get a chance to see the South portrayed in any games, except for maybe the last one was the infamous game that was in New Orleans, you know, back in the day, or what was it? Three from, I forgot the name of it, from Hangar 13.
Where was Mafia 3?
Mafia 3. That's the one I was thinking about. You nailed it. Mafia 3. And that's a rare sight in and of itself. But to have this story be one where, you know, you have this young black woman protagonist, you have this mashup of mysticism that's in the game, you have this these moments of just like fine detailed work that you see from this dev team that really shines through. It was just a really beautiful time. It speaks to the current state of the world in some ways. It's really interesting to see a discussion around pieces of the antebellum South mixed with this musical flavoring that happens with it. And all of that stuff in a way that comes across with pretty good combat that could be a little bit better. But overall, like the enjoyment that I got out of this game was something that I was expecting. And it's very rare these days to have expectations meet actual payout and pay off in those ways. And I feel like that game did a really fantastic job for me in terms of that, for sure.
Man, the first time we ever saw a glimpse of South of Midnight, I was intrigued. And as you said, the art direction, the look and feel of this world is so unique, so interesting, so detailed. I can't wait to dive into this game. And I love that you came away from it enjoying all those aspects, and the, you know, the sort of the depth at which they are willing to use that tapestry and mine it for folklore, for mood. It really does look like something so special on that level. I'm really excited for South of Midnight, and have been since the first moment I saw it. The fact that you describe it as a musical is wild to me, because I know that they've been talking a lot about the selection of music for the game and how big a deal that is for it. Can you talk a little bit more about why you would use that word, musical?
Yeah, I mean, besides the kind of, you know, thematic parts that they kind of weave through the game, each kind of entity, there are these mystical monsters, and each one of them, you know, the game deals a lot with the ideas of trauma. And each one of these mystical creatures, they basically have their own themes. They have their own theme songs that happens in those boss battles that you wind up going through. But even in between those times, there's, you know, small pieces of just like flavor of the space. Like they used this really young children's choir that has this melody that kind of tramples through the space, and it's really haunting, but it's also just like feels like the world is asking for you to kind of come into it. It's asking you to kind of like play in the space and understand it. But that's where you get the kind of musical parts, where it feels like the conversations that are happening within the lyrics are speaking directly to what's happening in that character's kind of lore. And that brings this really interesting space to it, where, you know, the first one you see is a character called Two-Toe Tom, which is this big alligator that lives in the world. And you find out, you know, what happened to that alligator throughout those moments where it became this entity. But the music changes and swells and kind of moves you through that space when you're in that battle. And it's giving you information alongside the fact that it's kind of playing as the underbelly for what the battle is going to wind up being that you see in most games. So it winds up being something really unique in that way, where, you know, I haven't seen that done before in games, where they're taking that artistry and really embellishing it and kind of growing it in a way that feels not only tied to the world, but also tied to the moment that you're in. And that's super cool. Like I don't see that often, and I don't think I've seen that done this well from a team outside of what Compulsion has done so far.
That's so cool. That is just really wild. And I love the ambition of that, pushing at the boundaries of what we know video games able to do. Just really cool. Mechanically, is the game fun moment to moment? Obviously there are these big boss battles and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about sort of the gameplay side of it?
Yeah. So you wind up fighting these entities called Haints, which are basically like, if you were to take all of the yucky bits that have gone into your life and as trauma and as hurt and angst, you bottle that up and that kind of manifests itself as one of these monsters. You find yourself in these small kind of arenas where you're having these combat moments. The one thing I would say is this isn't an open world game. It is very kind of, sectioned off in where you wind up having those combat moments. And there isn't a ton of things to do, except some kind of light exploration in some of the settings that are there. But that's where you see most of the kind of connective tissue. It feels like go into an arena, have your fight, go on to the next part where you're looking for more exploration and exposition from the world, and then kind of rinse and repeat to go through that. There's some platforming in there, which is really fun and interesting and smart, and some exploration of some inner spaces where you go and find some more parts of the lore and conversations. But that's kind of the moving you through the game is go from one spot, have a couple of battles in the space, continue, rinse and repeat.
So I don't think Microsoft will do this, but I think there's something very interesting here. Kaz, I'm listening to you talk about South of Midnight and how gorgeous it looks and what it's able to do, where there's a real position to be like, hey, $450 is really expensive. Want to play the best looking games right now? You already have the console. This is an Xbox. Game Pass Ultimate. Play South of Midnight. Play the incredible looking South of Midnight right now for $19 a month. Like, I've always loved cloud gaming, and I feel like now is maybe its moment bigger than ever if somebody wants to jump in on it, because, you know, you don't need the console, right? You don't, you already have access to the best looking games if you just want to try it for a sub. Anyway, total aside, but as I was looking at South of Midnight, it, you know, the graphic style that they're bringing to the table there, it's phenomenal, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. Like the conversations that we had with the team was they literally went to a studio that does that work specifically and had, you know, learned about how to translate the physical version of stop motion to a digital format for their game. In a way that's really interesting, because the only other couple of games I've seen do that is like the Harry Halibut game.
Yeah. Which was actual stop motion, right?
Which was actual stop motion. And then there's another game that's coming out very soon. That's going to be on PlayStation VR 2 and PlayStation that will also kind of feature that stop motion work, but it just translates so well to the world that they're building, where everything feels like it's handmade and stitched together. It feels like tapestry, literally. It would be cool to see if them. I have a feeling it would potentially hit Game Pass at some point down the line. It just makes sense for that game to get more love in the way that it has. And to be fair, Compulsion has made a couple of games that I really have loved over the years, you know, like
it's on Game Pass. It's day one.
Yeah. It's day one.
Yeah.
Look at me not knowing things. But like, you know, Compulsion has made some really fantastic stuff. Like We Happy Few was a game that didn't get a ton of love, but I loved it. And now this version of what they're doing, like I again hope that they get a chance to build upon this thing that I remember hearing the team talk about is like, we want to find really interesting ideas that we can run with. And I feel like we're in a space now where, again, this is going to go back to price and I hate it, but it's the fact that like all of the things that we're seeing right now in gaming spaces are kind of governed by, do you think you're going to be able to get a sequel? Do you think this will be financially successful? Do you think that we're going to be able to pull this off? And they took a creative chance and Microsoft, you know, harbored it and gave it a space. And we're seeing pretty good reviews across the board. And everyone that I can see, at least on my timeline, is in love with it. So it's fantastic. I'm happy for them.
Yeah, I agree. It's neat to see, you know, this, you know, when Microsoft, whatever many years ago it was now, announced all those acquisitions of studios that they were building out their first party library and Compulsion. I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting one. Man, it really does feel like they were given license to try something new. And I think that's so cool. And I'm loving that about, you know, say what you will about consolidation and all that stuff. There's downsides, certainly. But it is neat that Microsoft seems to have allowed some of these, you know, these studios that they gobbled up to try stuff and not just be like assigned to the next sequel of whatever. And I think South of Midnight is certainly one of the most exciting examples of that, of something that just doesn't look doesn't look like anything else, doesn't feel like anything else. Has its own identity in such an interesting way. And man, I'm always drawn to that. It's not just the, you know, carbon copy of 400 other things.
Really quickly, I did want to add this because I think it's important, is this game is not a happy game.
Oh, interesting.
I think, and I bring that up because there are some potentially triggering things in there. There are conversations around neglect. There are conversations around... not child abuse, but child abandonment. So I think if you are very sensitive to some of those things, and there isn't a trigger warning in the beginning of the game for some of that, I don't believe, if I remember correctly, but this is a very grim tale. Grimm's tale. What I mean by that is they are bringing you these conversations and these ideas around the lore here, but it is not a like happy go lucky. We're going to be jaunting into these spaces and fighting monsters. It is really digging into some interesting plot points and discussions around loss and all those things. So go tread lightly, but I think it's worth it.
Well, that's South of Midnight. It will be out very soon if you're listening to this. Speaking of grim tales, Christian Spicer, you've been playing a grim game again.
And again, and again, and again. Yeah, I was given a code to The Last of Us Part 2 on PC. And so if you've listened to this show at all, you know that I'm a big Last of Us fan. You know that I hosted the official The Last of Us podcast for Sony and Naughty Dog. That podcast is included and has been included as a bonus feature in that game. I played the game early. I played the game again. I played the PS5 version of it. And now I'm playing the PC version of it. I put up a at embargo video review again at Let's Chat Games, which christianspicer.substack.com. You can see some very early gameplay of me. No spoiler stuff. It's all within the first hours, the video I included in that of this PC version. And so the game as a whole, I adore, right? I love it. It's one of my favorite games of all time. I think it's such a brave sequel. And I think it's a phenomenal game in and of itself. I think it plays great. I think the story is like South of Midnight, not necessarily a happy one. You don't leave feeling great necessarily between play sessions, but I think it's an important story and one that resonates and stays with you. And this version of it has the remastered No Return, which is the roguelike mode in it. It has additional characters and additional maps, so it's built out that way. And the other stuff that this version of the game is bringing to the table are graphical bells and whistles on PC that are not available on PlayStation 5 or even PlayStation 5 Pro. So, it's not reinventing the wheel. This is very much a PC port of the game that exists on PlayStation 5. Like, it's two new characters and I think four new maps for that mode. Not enough, I think, to warrant a purchase if you already are happy with it on PlayStation 5 or PlayStation 5 Pro. It's not like, and also now this extra stuff, this extra bonus content is very much a PC port of that PlayStation 5 version of the game. But I think it's one of the best games ever made. And I think having it on PC is very important because PC games largely remain compatible. You know, it's on in your Steam library. When you upgrade your GPU, you often get free upgrades, Jeff. You don't have to pay to buy the game again.
That's right.
To get it to run better. You just get to click over highest on your settings or whatever it is now. And all of a sudden it looks better for you. And so having that on PC, a lot of these Sony games, I think is important. I think they were sorely missing before when Microsoft was putting their games on PC and Sony wasn't. I'm really glad to see Ragnarok, Horizon, Spider-Man, and these Last of Us games on PC. This version, Last of Us Part 2, has launched better than Last of Us Part 1 launched on PC. Last of Us Part 1 on PC, I think I'd use the word bad. It had a lot of bugs. It's much, 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 much better now, but it launched in pretty rough shape. Last of Us Part 2 on PC, 7 hours into this, umpteenth replay of the game, has been really good for me. There are some issues, and there's already been one, maybe two patches issued for the game. It's a Nixis port, and I know they're going to continue working on it, but I had some stuff like I'm hesitant to call it stutter because it's not that consistent. The word I used in my video review on Let's Chat Games newsletter was like shudder, where I would get occasional frame hangups or spikes, just something that felt off, but it wasn't like consistent. It wasn't every, fifth frame something was dropping. I would just kind of sometimes feel it in a way that was noticeable. And then I think, and I haven't played it since the most recent patch, so I don't know if this completely fixed it, but I think there was some shimmer or edge visibility when I had DLSS on balanced, which is how I was playing with it, that didn't seem to be there when I just tried to run it or ran it natively. But it's in good shape. It's super playable. I think it looks great. I think it's the best looking version of the game, even with those two caveats. And I think it's only going to get better as they continue to work on it. I think it definitely came out now to align with the HBO show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, why not?
Why not? And if you haven't played it, I think this is probably the best version of it to get. If you've played it umpteenth times like I have, you're already a sicko and you bought it.
Did you? You know, you've got that beefy jeepy, but you played this on the PS5, the remastered version. Is it significantly improved from that, or is it just kind of comparable to what PS5 remaster was doing?
So I don't have a PS5 Pro, so it's just right. Base PS5 versus this on a NVIDIA provided 5080. Noticeably better.
Yeah.
On PC. Again, even with those minor, I would call them minor graphical hiccups that I described, I can't believe that this was a PS4 game. I know this is the remastered version, whatever, but like the remastered version wasn't on PS4. But I mean, just Naughty Dog's animation, the scenes of playing the guitar, very, again, no spoilers, but like literally opening moments of the game and fingers on guitar and the first time you're playing in the snow. And it's not an open world game, so you can't go anywhere, but just like the density of the foliage and the snow and you traversing through it and those character animations when you sneak up behind something and grab it and wrestle it to the ground in the snow, it's exquisite. Playing it on PC right now, it feels like one of the best looking games that have come out, you know, this year. It's of that caliber.
There you go. Last of Us Part Two. Put yourself through it now before HBO makes you feel sad also.
It's so good. It's so good. But yes, it's not excellent. Cheerful necessarily, but it's so good.
Agreed. Agreed. If there was a movie I could compare it to, Christian, what? Never mind.
Minecraft. No,
I want to mention a game on my playlist real quick. There was a time when I was doing, you know, Jeff's Roguelite of the Week. We're back. Jeff's Roguelite of the Week. I'm going to tell you about a game I picked up for less than $15 on Steam this week, and I have been enjoying quite a bit. It's called Rogue Loops, which sounds like something a person like me would have for breakfast, enjoying my Rogue Loops cereal. But it's actually a really clever concept here. This is certainly going to evoke Hades type vibes from folks. It is that top down isometric action roguelite where you go from room to room and defeat a bunch of enemies to clear the room and then keep going. The difference here in Rogue Loops is that the rooms, such as they are, before you get to the boss, are static in that you have kind of I think of it kind of like a yin and yang symbol almost. You have this room that's got two doors, one on the left and one on the right, and it's kind of bisected. And so you've got like a top half and a bottom half of this room. And when you're in the bottom, the top half, you're in the top half, and you have to kill everything there in order to go through the door to get to the bottom half. And then you just sort of keep doing that, hence the loop part of Rogue Loops. You go through the door on the left side, you kill all the people in that room, you go up through the door on the right side, kill all the people in the top half, and you keep doing that until you have filled up this meter of hardship, really, that will unlock the boss. And how do you do that? Well, every time you go through that door, even the first time you enter that room, you are given a choice, two options of what consists of an upgrade that you're going to get, a boon, and a debuff, for lack of a better term. So, for example, it'll say something like, hey, you can get a cool new power. You can get a cool new upgrade. You can get a cool new – you can get 150 gold. Lots of different options on the good side. But in order to do that, well, there's going to be a giant flame that erupts in the room periodically, or there's going to be a cloud that obscures everything that walks in it. So the bad guys in it, you won't be able to see them. Or if you walk in it, you won't be able to see anything. or they'll be, you know, a boss will just spawn periodically. Or they've actually done a really creative job with the kinds of buffs and debuffs that you're going to get in these rooms. I thought they really changed up the gameplay, which I love. But so you've got these two choices, either this good thing and bad thing or this good thing and bad thing. And those bad things are rated from 1 to 3 into how difficult it's going to be. And they're rated in skulls, 1 to 3 skulls. And those skulls fill up this meter, and you have to get like 14 skulls or whatever it is to unlock the boss. So you're looping through, constantly making these choices and upgrading yourself and upgrading the room in bad ways. And those things stay put on the half of the room that you've applied them to. So the fire that erupted that you went through last time you went through this part of the room is still there, but now you got to add something else to it. But you're also getting more powerful yourself. So it's really kind of a like a speed run, a hyper intense version of what you do in Hades or Dead Cells or whatever else, where oftentimes you'll have the option of like, you want to make all the enemies harder here and you'll get better, cooler stuff. Well, this game says you have to make it harder every single time you move through this room, which you're going to do over and over and over again. So it keeps like upping the ante of how just bonkers it gets in the rooms, but also you're getting cooler on just a much quicker rate because you're just doing this over and over and over trying to get to unlock the boss, which is actually really cool. The downside is you're only ever in the same room that whole time. So it loses some of the cool variety you get in something like a Hades, where every time you go through a door, hey, what's in this room? How's this room laid out? What's the cool stuff that's happening in here? You know, what's the biome like? What's the graphical, you know, differences here? That's just the pure variety of it. You lose that because you're just staring at the same room that's cut in half, and you're just looping through it. So in that sense, there is a downside because it can get a little like, oh, we're still here, you know? That said, the game looks great. The enemy designs are awesome. Your abilities are cool. The upgrades are really clever. It's not just stat increases, although sometimes it'll be like, hey, five more attack, whatever. Rarely it's that, but you always get an option because there'll be awesome, really cool stuff. Like a floating wolf head will be roaming around and attacking the bad guys for you. Or, your attacks will explode now or something. Like it really does a good job of making the upgrades and the debuffs feel wildly different and wildly creative. So I really like Rogue Loops. I will say it's hard. At least I find it hard. And I think it has a really high skill ceiling. There are 4 different classes in the game that you unlock that all play really, really differently. I haven't unlocked all of them. But the ones that I have play very, very differently. And I've read that they continue to be very differently. So like the game actually has a lot of variety in that sense. It just doesn't have a lot of variety in an individual run because you're just looping through the same geography over and over again until you get to the boss, and then that loads a new room for you if you beat the boss. But man, the game looks great. The attacks are cool. And there's, like I said, a really high skill ceiling because you've got a dash that makes you invulnerable. You've got a basic attack that is cool. You've got these magical these artifacts and runes and stuff that you can apply to yourself that give you like magical attacks that all have timing elements to them, so you can have sort of a perfect cast of any of them that adds extra features to the spell if you can pull off the timing of the perfect cast, which is cool. And you also have a shield block that that you can that will block any incoming thing. It's not like a parry. It literally is you become impervious to things for a moment, but also it makes you sit in the same spot. So it's very, you know, push and pull of the benefit of it. But I think people with much higher skill than I have will find ways to – I mean, I think streamers who are really, really good at these games will have a field day with this one because it's really cool. But like I said, like there's all the – there's things where you have to slow down after you dash, you know, for a little while or – and so that thing is applied to the room or the half of the room. And when you're in the top half – for example, maybe you won't have that, but then you return to the bottom half and you have that again. And you're constantly like going up and down and up and down, killing all the things. And like, oh yeah, I remember how hard it was in here for that thing or what cool thing I got when I went down here, but now I'm back up and now I have this other set of good things and bad things in play. It's a cool idea. It's a very cool idea. The game looks so good. Feels really good. You know, so much of what makes these games work or not work is the just feeling of smacking stuff. And Rogue Loops gets that really, really right. We've been talking a lot about price all episode long. I got this game for $13, I think. You can do a lot worse with your $13 than Rogue Loops. There's a lot of game here. You know, it has the normal roguelite thing where you're acquiring sort of, you know, meta currency that you can use between runs to upgrade the upgrades that last really, really long. And one of the coolest upgrades you get right away is like your first hit on any bad guy, you can like really have huge bonuses on, which feels really good. Like, I think they've done a really good job making all of the upgrades and bonuses and stuff really feel impactful. And that's one of, I think, the biggest things you want out of a game like this. So Rogue Loops gets a big thumbs up from me, even if there's a chance that you might feel like it gets a little stale, like you're just a little repetitive, staying in those same spot for so long. I think it still gives you enough cool stuff to do in those spots that it's worth playing. It's called Rogue Loops, and it's on Steam. Rogue Loops, a delicious way and part of this complete breakfast.
Probably works on Steam Deck, I'd guess, too.
I was just about to ask. I was wondering if it is.
I'm sure it does. I've not tried it on Steam Deck, but I think this would be a great Steam Deck game for sure. And it won't cost you $80. So there you go. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Khalif Adams, saving our day like Superman out of the phone booth. We appreciate you being here, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you for dragging me out of the snow. I'm wondering if Super Pup is still out there holding it down for everybody else. As always, gents, love being on with y'all. You are the best in the business. And I just want to say it is always fun to come back here and get some really just smart conversations about video games. I need that in my life. You can check out more of my stuff on the Small to Me podcast. We are now in year 11 of our show.
Congrats.
Yeah, I had hair at some point. you can check us out. We're doing a lot of multi-streaming these days, so you can check us out on X. You can check us out on YouTube and TikTok as well. So you can go check out our reviews and previews and conversations there. And yeah, I'm excited for basketball playoffs are about to start very soon.
The Warriors got good again. I just love it.
I mean, so much fun. It's nuts. Jimmy Butler. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. But yes, again, always love being here with y'all. And thank you again for you and the rest of the DLC community for always giving me love. So I appreciate it.
We are in your debt, my friend. Christian Spicer, what do you got going on this week?
Well, I mentioned my newsletter, which folks can subscribe to for free at christianspicer.substack.com. I put out a written Day of Switch 2 announcement article. And as you mentioned on the Wednesday show, Jeff, it's like, oh, it's Switch 2 day. We have so many more Switch 2 days ahead of us.
A lot of Switch 2 days coming. Yeah.
Even unplanned Switch 2 days. And then I put up a video of The Last of Us Part 2 on PC that folks can check out there as well. And I'm working on my next written piece about replaying favorite games That should be coming out soon as well. And then this show and myself and you and Ka, we are also all on Blue Sky. I'm on there as Christian Spicer, and this show is there as DLC Hype Train, if you want to follow along there.
Yes. You know, I usually mention all my normal stuff. I'm going to just mention something I mentioned last week that I'm doing again. I'm running Hood to Coast in Portland, and I need your support. We're trying to raise money for the Providence Cancer Institute, a really great cause. You can support my just really foolish run, 200 miles, relay race, 36 hours, no sleep, 12 people in two vans. It's just dumb, really unpleasant in a number of ways. Smell, chief among them. But you can make it all worthwhile because every penny that you donate at runjeffrun.com, which takes you to my Providence Cancer Institute fundraising page, every penny goes to a great cause. So please, we're trying to get $20,000. That's my goal. I think we can do it, but it takes your support. No dollar amount's too small. If you only have a buck, $5, $20, any amount you can throw our way would be certainly appreciated in trying to get to that goal. RunJeffRun.com. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Ka, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
If you are looking for a fun jaunt through murder and mayhem, the Netflix show The Residence has been very, very good. I've been extremely excited and been having a lot of fun with it. It is like Columbo, but moved into the modern times, which is great. And if you got the Columbo reference, shout out to you and your 401k. but what I have been having a blast with it has been super, super fun. I just love the kind of just reverent nature of it. And, you know, a good whodunit is always, always fun to kind of get into. So The Residence on Netflix is my pick.
I'm so glad to hear this is good. I have hovered over it a few times to almost start it, and I'm gonna do it. We got too many things going. We got mm-hmm. White Lotus, and we got Righteous Gemstones right now. We got all these other things, but I can't wait to watch this. I'm glad to hear it's good. Mm-hmm. It looks really intriguing to me. I love the little clip that they show. I'm like, I'm into this. Mm-hmm. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
This past week was my kiddo's spring break, so we went out on an adventure, and part of where we went was to Sedona, Arizona, where I have never been before or wanted to go. We had a trip planned previously, but then the pandemic happened and it got canceled. We finally got out there. Holy moly, if you're close or enjoy outdoor hiking and just kind of seeing beautiful, beautiful vistas or off-roading, of all the places I've traveled, and recency bias is in full effect here, but I think Sedona, Arizona is one of the most beautiful geographic like vistas I've ever taken in. Absolutely was floored away. It lived up to the hype, unlike the Switch 2 Direct for some people. Cough, Jeff, cough. But I loved it. If you're close or thinking about taking the trip, let this be the encouraging words to get you off the couch and out that way. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of the Southwest United States. Loved it. Sedona, Arizona. That's it. Go travel.
I want to tell you in my parting gift something that I didn't think I would be saying. The Minecraft movie. There's no way that movie is going to be good, right? Wrong. I had a blast with the Minecraft movie. I'll be talking about it more in depth on the film cast, which you can hear wherever you get podcasts. But holy moly, I had a great time at the Minecraft movie. I really thought it was going to be a stinker, but it wasn't. If you, like me, loved Napoleon Dynamite, guess what? Minecraft is like a secret sequel to Napoleon Dynamite. It's Jared Hess directed it, and it's got the same sensibilities, and it's just hilarious. So, hey, if you need me to tell you, go take your kids to the Minecraft movie because you're not going to hate it. Then let this be that, because I had a blast. I saw it with my son. He loved it. And I loved it. I genuinely loved it. I couldn't believe it. So Minecraft movie. You don't need me to tell you because it made gobs of money this weekend, but I think the biggest video game opening of all time, beating Mario Brothers. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from our buddy Brad, who says, I realize that parting gift doesn't typically mean pimp your kids stuff, but I can't help it. This week, my son Stellan just put out a 6-song EP with his band Still Deciding. The EP is called We Survived for This, and it's a punk, post-punk, garage rock record filled with a 7th grader's memories of lockdown and thoughts about growing up in a post-pandemic world. It was mixed by Zach Carper of the veteran punk band punk outfit Fiddlar. And if you don't trust me about the quality of the songs because I'm the dad, maybe take Zach's word when he first emailed me back about mixing them. I quote, I have to ask, who wrote these amazing songs? They're truly awesome. So if you like bands like Fiddlar, The Frights, or Skeggs, I've never heard of any of those because I am old and not cool. Or even some classic punk outfits like Stiff Little Fingers, but feel like they'd be even better if the members were still in middle school, please check out Still Deciding, We Survived for This, available everywhere. Best, Brad. Ah, Brad, how cool. You know what? We're always down for getting excited about our kids and the things that our kids make. And if we can point some people toward Stellan's album, then we're happy to do so. Still Deciding, We Survived for This. Christian, I'm sure you've heard of all those bands that I've never heard of.
And I've heard the EP. It's good. It's punk. It's, you know, it's not pop punk, but it's like... I've hung out with Stellan. We've gone to a show together with Brad as well. Not just taking middle schoolers to show. But dude can rip. Dude can rip. It's like I came home and just shake my head at my own kids. You know, like what are you doing?
Yeah, give me a parting gift.
Yeah, something. Oh, you played Split Fiction with me to completion. Big whoop. Where's your EP? Where's your EP?
If you have something that your offspring have done or not, or if there's literally anything else that you'd like us to have as a parting gift, feel free to send it our way, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Khalif Adams and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get merch for our show by visiting our store. Store.dlcpod.com is where that is. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible with their support. You can become one at patreon.com/dlcpod. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler, ColumbusAutoMall.com.